Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everybody, and Happy New Year. Welcome to Fantasy Hockey X on a Wednesday night. If you're here on the East Coast, hope you're enjoying that storm. Looks like it's going to be quite a doozy and could actually have a little bit of an impact on some of tomorrow's games, or at least one. I'm your host, Chris Wassel. With me, as always, is Michael Clifford and Christopher Pacheco. Good evening, guys.
Good evening, fellas.
Good evening, gents. Right. Happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you guys and to all the listeners as well.
Happy New Year to everybody, indeed. We have no time to just... Let's go, literally. All right, folks. First up, Florida travels into Boston to face the Boston Bruins. Florida looked slightly bad in their last game against Minnesota. Okay, really freaking bad. At one point, shots were 33-10 at one point, which I seem to remember Florida doing this to a team earlier in the year while we were talking about it on this show. So James Reimer finally fell from his pedestal after winning, you know, four or five straight games and looking amazing in net, which is kind of normal. The one thing, guys, of Florida, at least in the last five or six games, they don't score much. They don't give up much normally. Obviously, that number's been, got a little bit thrown off. Boston has been ridiculously stingy. They've given up six goals in their last five games. Tuukka Rask, dare I say, it almost looks like a Vezina candidate, maybe. As hard as that is to believe by some. And yes, Boston's line two, guys, has been as good or in some ways better because of value cost than line one. Really fast. Mike, am I jamming in number two again for Boston tomorrow night?
I mean, they're obviously in play here. The Panthers finally put their top line back together with Barkov, Huberdeau, and Dadonov. That trio has been far and away the best line that Florida has. I mean, that sounds kind of obvious. You put your, three of your four best players in the same line. Obviously, they're going to play well, but sometimes you can have second and third lines that are good defensively or something like that might be able to lighten the load a little bit for the top line, but that's not the case in Florida. Like, honestly, outside of the top line, the rest of that lineup is just atrocious. I kind of feel bad for Vincent Trocheck because I think he's a pretty good player, but honestly, it doesn't really seem to matter who's on his line. They just keep sinking. So assuming that Bergeron matches up against Barkov, which is a pretty safe assumption, that should leave that second line pretty clear against Trocheck and company. I mean, if you just look at the numbers, man, like, honestly, it doesn't matter if it's the Donoff or Verbata or McGinn or whoever is on Trocheck's line. They just get absolutely steamrolled. So I think, given that it's a 12-game slate, I wouldn't worry about ownership here too much. I know that Boston's second line has been on quite a roll, and that'll usually draw ownership from people that just kind of look at game logs. And Dan Hines actually up to like 4,500 or something like that on DK. I never thought I'd see the day with Dan Hines, and I think he's like $400 behind Tanner Pearson or something like that. It's absolutely crazy. But yeah, I mean, Krejci, Spooner, DeBrusk, if you want to use them. I mean, Nash, Heinen, and Backes hasn't even been that bad either. So I think you can use either. Honestly, I think all of Boston's three lines are in play here, but I can understand fading the top line because that matchup with Barkov isn't that great. So, second and third line here. I mean, if you want to use one-offs like Spooner or Heinen, that's fine. I wouldn't necessarily use them in cash games. I think they're just better suited for just stacking a GPP and hope they can play for a couple.
Yeah, I think given the matchup here for Boston on the whole, they're likely to be popular tomorrow night, and I don't really have anything to add other than what Mike said. I just think from a projection standpoint, obviously the Bergeron line is going to carry the top projection probably on the slate. Though if you do look on the micro matchup type of of situation. He'll probably have to deal with Barkov, and that's not as friendly of a matchup. So I can understand if you wanted to fade there in tournaments. I still think in cash games you could grab a couple of those guys, or maybe just, you know, like Marchand or Pasternak or something like that. I think is very viable. But those depth lines for Boston have been great of late, and the matchup for them is actually better than the top line. So I get why people are going to want to gravitate that way, but I just know from a projection standpoint, they're not going to be able to beat out Bergeron's line tomorrow night, and at least on our site.
That is, of course, provided that they even play. I mean, you know, it's the elephant in the room. At least what I've been told, expect an announcement early tomorrow afternoon as to what they may do, and then by 5 p.m., hopefully, 4 or 5 p.m., they will actually make a decision. It might be sooner, but it won't be any later than 4 or 5 p.m. because of the fiasco. The last time there was a huge snowstorm in Boston, it was a mess. All right, next up, the Marlow Bowl. That's right, the Patrick Marlow Bowl, as the San Jose Sharks travel into Toronto to face the Maple Leafs. Hooray. Oh, crap. The expected goals for is actually not that high in this one, which is weird. Only a little bit above 5.5, which I was a little bit surprised by. But, hey, you know, these are things that sometimes happen with the odds and some of the corrections. Basically, Sharks have been kind of started rolling along again. They won 4 of their last 5. They're getting timely scoring from kind of in a balanced effort. You throw out the one huge clunker that they had just, oh, I don't know, very recently. And they've been just fine. Decent road record, kind of, you know, and you know what you get. It's funny with San Jose. San Jose has one of the better penalty kills in the league now at around 85%. And unlike L.A., who seems to bleed chances and just somehow hit the magic side of the leprechaun every time, they've been legitimately good on the penalty kill, and they've improved their power play, guys. San Jose is one of the top 5 teams in the last 6 weeks on the power play. It's come up to 22%, which early in the season, when they were languishing at 16%, this seemed like a pipe dream, but yet here we are. So, oh, God, do I want to go straight to LeBanc tomorrow, Mike?
I mean, the first thing that jumped out at me on this slate, when looking at this game, is the Matthews line. Obviously, Matthews has been back for a few games now, back from Nylander and Hyman. That's been one of the better lines. Not only just Toronto, but league-wide, when you look at shot generation, expected goals, and things like that. And the interesting thing that I found was the other night when Toronto was at home to Tampa, you know, earlier in the season, back in October, November, Mike Babcock tended to use both the Kadri line and the Matthews line against the other team's top line. When Stamkos and Kucherov came to town, Kadri and Komarov and Marlow, more so Kadri, was on the ice for every 5-on-5 shift that Stamkos and Kucherov took, except for one. And I think the one was just coming off a power play or a penalty kill for one of the others, something like that, so they couldn't use them. And that was it. It was a complete hard match. So, you know, if you think they do that again tonight, Thursday night against Thornton, the top line for San Jose, then that could free up Matthews against Couture's line. And Couture's line hasn't really been that great defensively, and I think it might have a little bit more to do with the defensive depth on San Jose than Couture and his wingers specifically, but it doesn't really matter. All that matters is that that they can generate those shots. So Matthews' line is something that jumped out to me initially. I don't know how much San Jose I'm going to have. They haven't been a great scoring team. I know that they generate shots and they have good underlying numbers. I just, you know, when Joe Thornton is the guy that's scoring goals, you know, your team's in a little bit of a problem. So at least initially, I don't know how much San Jose I'm going to have. If anything, it would probably just be the top line with Thornton. I'm going to have to wait and see. Honestly, I think right now Matthews and Nylander are my two favorites out of this game just because of the way that the matchups have been going.
Oh, crap. We might have killed off Chris.
Sorry, I muted myself and didn't unmute myself, which happens a little bit too often with my microphone. Apologies. I was just wanting to say that I think Matthews and Nylander are the play here. I don't think that the macro matchup is like great or anything like that, but in this game, I think they're really the ones that interest me the most on the Toronto side. I don't think I would look towards the depth lines here for Toronto tomorrow night. I mean, the Bozak line doesn't have a terrible price tags, and they're usually plays that I make in tournaments because I like their upside. So I think they're also fine in a GPP. But I think Matthews and Nylander, of course, are the top attractions there in Toronto. On the San Jose side, there's very little correlation. Because the top line doesn't, like, all the members on the top line don't get power play time together. And so it makes it a little bit of a challenge for stacking purposes. And also the price tags on, like, Joe Thorne, like, it's not great. It's nearly 5K on DraftKings. So I think for me on the San Jose side is definitely Brent Burns as the top play. And then Joe Pavelski, who does have a good price tag on DraftKings of just $5,700.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
It's definitely something I'm going to explore. All right, next up. these two teams do play. It's always a little bit hit or miss. I could say that about a few of the games on the schedule. Carolina travels to Pittsburgh to play the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Penguins looked like they were all but given up for dead, and then they magically played the Philadelphia Flyers and got all better. Well, at least for one night anyway. And just thoroughly just dismantled Philadelphia in the second period. That saw them score four times in what felt like 10 minutes in real time. Never mind 10 minutes in hockey time. Again, there's a lot of oddities and strangeness with Pittsburgh. Obviously, their power play is... Well, it's one of the best ones on the night. Actually, it is the best one on the night at 26% now. Still good home record. Still been giving up a lot of goals lately. Crosby's in a little bit of a slump, dare I say. It's weird. Crosby's individual chances for is actually not even top 100 in the league right now. It's very bizarre. But again, we've said that a few years ago, and look at what happened. And this may be one of those almost get well matchups, or at least might be potential for one. Carolina got burned by Cam Ward. Let's see. Mike has said that about 30 times this year already. Don't get too fond of Cam Ward. Yeah, people got burned by Cam Ward in droves last night. Not a surprise. It's kind of a good matchup for Pittsburgh in a way. Carolina comes in. They're back to their normal sort of road woes, giving up a good bit over three goals a game in the last month on the road. Scoring for them has been down. Their power play is down. Their penalty kill is starting to show signs of improvement. In the last month, it was about 84%. At one point, overall season-wise, they've gotten down pretty low. I almost don't care who starts for Carolina. I don't like much of Carolina other than maybe one or two contrarian plays. My question for Chris here is, what can I touch on Pittsburgh that won't cost me a pretty penny?
Well, I think... For me, the plays that I like on the Pittsburgh side of things, quite frankly, are a couple of their defensemen. Chris Letang, of course, is usually someone I like to target in cash games because he plays a bunch of minutes, gets time on that top power play with all the studs. And so, and on top of that, he came back from injury yesterday and played 27 minutes. So clearly, you know, they're not trying to ease him back in or anything like that. So I think if I was to play a cash game format, I'd be inclined to play someone like Letang. This is a good matchup for these Pittsburgh defensemen because Carolina, like, they do shoot the puck quite a bit. It's just they don't score a whole lot. So it's a good matchup for block shots. And so, you know, Letang for me is in play. I think Justin Schultz, who also came back yesterday from injury, he's just $3,800. I find that to be a pretty attractive price tag. Outside of that, I feel like most of the other skaters that I want to target on the Pittsburgh side are priced mostly appropriately, like Hornqvist at $6,300, Crosby $7,000. You know, Malkin is $6,800, which is a little bit more of an attractive price tag. It's not a bad matchup for Pittsburgh because Carolina is an above average team defensively, but as you mentioned, Chris, their goaltending is going to let them down more times than not. So if you wanted to play the top line or the second line in a tournament, I do not mind it. In a cash game setting, I'm just going to go with Letang and Schultz.
Yeah, I think one more name I might throw out there would be Daniel Sprong. $2,800 on DK. He took a few shifts with Crosby in the last game. Now, people don't know Sprong. the one thing about him that everybody knows that you should know is that he just has an absolute wicked shot. Like, just one of the most dangerous releases that you'll see. He's put up big points, big goals down in the AHL. He got called up. He did start the game in the bottom six for Pittsburgh. He didn't spend, you know, significant amounts of time with Crosby, but I think he took two or three shifts with them. You know, at $2,800, I don't know if he's necessarily a cash game play because he could very well just end up on the fourth line and play 9 minutes or something like that. But, you know, we've seen just how often Pittsburgh can rotate their lines throughout a game. So if you want to use him as a super cheap one-off in a GPP, and then you can really go just about anywhere you want to fit in the rest of your stacks, I don't mind doing that. You know, the guy's just a flat-out shooter. As far as what I like in this game, honestly, I think my favorite play might be Matt Murray. I mean, Carolina's a team that puts up a lot of shots, but they don't put up a lot of goals. And it's not like this is an aberration for them. This has been going on for like 5 or 6 years. More so in the last like 3 years. It's a team that's been able to generate a lot of offense but not a lot of goals. So that, you know, it's kind of that Devin Dubnyk conundrum where, you know, if Murray has a bad night, he could easily let in 5 goals on 35 shots. But with the way that Carolina struggles to score, it could be 1 goal on 35 shots. So I think Murray's probably my favorite play out of this game. I don't think I'll have much of Pittsburgh, honestly. You know, you talked about the Carolina PK. No, it's not great, but they also don't take very many penalties. They're honestly, they're at like 2.5 a game, which is by far the lowest in the NHL. So I don't want to rely on Pittsburgh, you know, converting at least twice on, you know, just 2 or 3 power plays. So I'll probably avoid the expensive skaters. You know, I think I'll have Murray, you know, maybe Sprong if I need some huge salary relief to fit in a couple expensive stacks, but that's probably about it for me.
All right. Next up, the ultimate hit or miss matchup of the night. And it's only because of historical context. The New York Islanders on a 3-game bender, I mean losing streak, travel to Philadelphia to face the Flyers. All right, here we go. Make this very simple. The Islanders give up a whopping 3.76 goals a game on the road. Matter of fact, all but 7 of their games this year, guys, they've given up less than 3. I mean, let's just sink in for a second. They've played 40 games. In 33 of them, they've given up 3 or more. It's not even close. It's just an insane number. They score a lot. They give up a lot. The strange thing in all of this is you're facing a team, one team that's bad on the road, bad penalty kill, against another team that has an equally bad penalty kill and is bad at home. Philly's a 500 team in NHL terms, allowing almost 3 goals a game at home. And oh, by the way, they just got spanked by Pittsburgh. So they're not too happy either. There's a lot of options here. Holy good God. I mean, we could spend 15 minutes on this, but that's not going to happen. We have to take the one off. Mike, do I focus on the power plays here just because?
Well, yeah. I mean, the Philly power play, obviously. You know, they just kind of seem to be back to where we expect them to be. They're the top shot generating team in the NHL when it comes to power plays. The Islanders, they don't take a ton of penalties, but they are slightly above league average. So that's kind of, or just about league average, sorry. But, you know, not bad for Philly. But honestly, the first thing that jumped out at me at this game is that Islanders second line. Obviously, they've been pretty good all year. They've been somewhat popular, but here on a 12-game slate where they're on the road, I can't see them, you know, being double-digit popular or anything like that. So I'm not worried about ownership. They're pretty cheap. I think the stack in total is about 14K. So if you want to use a super expensive stack elsewhere, like maybe Tampa or Boston or whatever, this would be the stack to use. And obviously, we've talked about this before, but the Philly top line is really good at shutting down other top lines, Giroux and Voracek, particularly, and Philly, you know, a few games ago put together Ivan Provorov and Shane Gostis pair as defense pair. They've been really good together this year. Not a huge sample. I think it's about 7 games worth or something like that, but the possession numbers are like 56% or something. Really, really, really strong. So I think baiting the Islanders top line here, and then if you can get to that second and third defense pair for the Flyers, if you can get to the second and third lines, I think that's where you can do the damage. So for me, if I could take one stack out of this game, it would be the Islanders second line of Barzal, Ladd, and Eberle.
Yeah, I really like that line as well, especially because of what it allows you to fit elsewhere. You know, on a macro matchup type of situation here for the Islanders, it's not a great context going into Philadelphia, but given the fact that that line is cheap and the cost savings it provides you, I certainly am about that line in tournaments and even in cash games. I do have a little bit of interest there. On the Philadelphia side, though, this is a very, very good context. First off, they're just at home. So they get to dictate matchups more than the road team. And on top of that, the Islanders on 5-on-5, like Chris, you mentioned, they have been really bad on the penalty kill. But on 5-on-5, I mean, they're bottom 6 in expected goals against per 60 and Corsi against per 60. Just not a good club defensively. That includes the Tavares line, the Barzal line. They don't really have a shutdown line. So I like this Philadelphia situation here. The challenge is trying to figure out what line I really want. And obviously the top line of Couturier with Giroux and Konechny is probably my lean. But I got to tell you, I still like Voracek and I still like Wayne Simmonds on that third line. Like, I don't think I would play Nolan Patrick or Jordan Wheel. I don't think I could go there. But Simmonds, just individually, given the matchup on the penalty, I think this is just great. It's a great context for him. He's just $5,200, and he is a really good offensive player on the power play. So it's easily one of those guys that can give you, like, 2 goals on any given night. And I don't think he's going to be very high owned because he's on the third line. So I'm very interested here in both cash games and GPPs.
All right. Next up, the Jonathan Drouin Bowl or the Mikhail Sergachev coming out party. Either or. Choose your own ending, basically, as the Tampa Bay Lightning travel up to Montreal looking for their 30th win of the season already, which just seems unfathomable when we were talking about season previews as they face the Montreal Canadiens. All right, simple numbers here. Montreal can't score a goddamn goal if you literally gave them the entire net to shoot at. That's right, they have 4 goals in their last 5 games. The under has hit in 6 straight. And yeah, there's trade rumors buzzing all around about Max Pacioretty on seemingly an hourly basis. I'm not kidding. Tampa comes in with the stingiest road goal differential in the league, guys, at 1.37 per game. It's just mind-boggling to see that just about halfway through the year. About the only thing that Tampa doesn't do well necessarily is their penalty kill, but even then, they kind of get away with it. It's just one of those things. They've won 4 of their last 5. They have one of the best power plays in the league. They score a ton of goals. I mean, and they don't give up a lot. And a lot of that has to do with Andrei Vasilevskiy, who's been excellent all season for them. Like we said, Montreal's a mess. No Shea Weber till at least probably February, the first week of February at best. It is what it is with them. Honestly, I hate to say recency bias has set in with me, but until I see something from Montreal, and the fact that their leading scorer is projected to finish with 44 points on the season, it's either Tampa or nothing. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I had this conversation Tuesday night offline with another NHL writer, and we were talking about DFS and stuff like that. And I said, the problem with using Montreal, and this is when they were at home in San Jose, it's kind of the same problem that you run into when you're looking at a team like Ottawa or something, specifically Ottawa, is that realistically, the scoring can come from any of 3 lines. And it's the same thing with Montreal again. I mean, arguably, Candace Gallagher and Byron have been the best line this year, and it's their 3rd line. Daniel Carr moved up in practice today, so maybe you want to take a shot on him. But here's the point, is that, like you said, Montreal is one of the lowest scoring teams in the league. I don't know if they can turn it around. We saw something similar happen in Boston last year under Claude Julien at times. The Bruins generate a lot of shots, but just not a lot of goals, kind of like in that Carolina vein. So, you know, if you stack a Montreal line, which one is it going to be? And can you rely on that line to get you 2 goals? I mean, I just kind of looked today over the game logs for the last month for Montreal, and they've only had 2 players have a multi-goal game. One was Shea Weber, who's not playing in this one. And the other was Nicolas Deslauriers. So you know what I mean? Like, who exactly are you going to rely on? Are you going to rely on Gallagher on the 3rd line? I mean, maybe you could if you want to. So, Jeff Petrie sticks out to me here just because, you know, especially if you look on FanDuel, he's only like 3,700. They'll still run the top power play unit. You spoke to that penalty kill that could be exploited if Vasilevskiy has an off game. So, you know, I'd be fine with that. But honestly, like, I don't know how you use the Habs anymore, especially on a massive 12-game slate. Like, this is only like 6 or 7 games, and you could have a conversation. But there's just so many places to go that I don't think it's necessary. Honestly, this is, other than maybe Petrie, this is probably largely a game I'm going to leave alone. I can see this, you know, being a pretty low-scoring game, you know, 2-1, 3-1, something like that. So I think other than Petrie, I won't have much out of this game.
Yeah, I mean, you guys both made your points about Montreal. I simply have nothing else to add there. I just think on such a big slate, you're fading there. Mike also mentioned the name that I find a little bit attractive, and that's Jeff Petrie, given the matchup for block shots and just the opportunity without Shea Weber. But honestly, I'm going to be looking elsewhere tomorrow. I'm probably not going to even roster Petrie myself. On the Tampa Bay side, obviously, if you wanted to grab one of Stamkos or Kucherov in cash games, I cannot fault you, given how incredible and productive they've been this year. And just given the fact that Carey Price has had a human year, You know, it's just not a it's not a great context going into Montreal, but they've been so great. I don't mind them in cash. In GPPs, I'm not sure we're going to get much of a discount on ownership. And I see this as a, as Mike said, a potential low scoring game. So I'm probably going to be more on the fade side, on the Tampa Bay side as well. But in cash games, I do think playing one of Kucherov or Stamkos or maybe even Hedman is appropriate.
Yep. Next up, the Buffalo Sabres travel to Minnesota to face the Minnesota Wild, who, yes, have Zach Parise back. And, yeah, he's just in his little training camp phase, so don't even think about rostering him just yet. Look, for what it's worth, for as bad as Minnesota has been on the road, they have been riding the ship at home. And over the, particularly the last 10 home games or so, they've allowed less than 2 goals a game very quietly. And that's brought their home record up to 13-4-2. Like we said, with a goals against average of 2.11 at home. That's also helped bring their home penalty kill, which is up above 85% for the first time all season. Again, you know, their power play has been a little bit hit or miss. Everybody knows that going in. And then there's, of course, Buffalo, which has been, well, let's face it, pretty goddamn awful. You know, giving up almost 3.6 goals a game on the road, giving up around 3 goals a game in their last 5. Everything's pretty much right consistently down the line, where they just give up defensive chances, not so much as they did last year and the year before, but it just seems they give them up at the worst possible time, and usually winds up resulting in goals. And the other obvious is, like we were talking about Montreal just before, they can't score. They score a little bit better on the road, but overall, this is a team that can barely eke out 2.2 goals a game, guys. That's pretty rough. I mean, if you're looking for anything from Buffalo, it's what, maybe Eichel, Ristolainen perhaps, maybe Evander Kane, if you're, but on a 12-game slate, It's kind of rough to even think about Buffalo on a night like this. For Minnesota, obviously look to see if Nino Niederreiter is good to go. But other than that, I mean, you can choose whatever you want, almost want with Minnesota, just because Minnesota is going to draw top, pretty good matchup here, and probably be underowned because of how big the slate is. Chris, is this a night to try Matthew Dumba perhaps again?
Well, I like Spurgeon better. I don't think that there's anything wrong with Dumba. It's just that the role now with Spurgeon back has diminished, right, especially on the power play. So I think if you wanted to play a defenseman on the Minnesota side of things, it would be Spurgeon for me. But Chris, as you mentioned, though, this is such a good matchup for Minnesota. You know, their top three lines are going to rate well in our projections tomorrow night. And usually, given how they split up their talent, their projections are kind of almost the same, other than like, whenever Zucker and Koivu and Granlund play together, obviously, like, they carry the top projections, but that's not really the case right now. It's just Koivu and Granlund skating together. So, you know, it's a good spot. I find it interesting that, like, when you look at the discrepancy between where Buffalo has actually been defensively, just on the standard stats, like goals against per game, and then you look at the shot suppression, you know, they're not completely awful on that end. The problem is they don't really have good goaltending. They play at a really low pace, and I think that's masking a little bit of the defensive issues on the advanced stats stuff. So I'm gonna just say they are not great defensively, and the goals against per game metric is showing that. And so I want to attack them tomorrow, and I think the top three lines here are very viable. I think Charlie Coyle, who's just $4,400, will continue to be a very strong value for us. He has switched over to center over on DraftKings, which is a little bit of an annoyance, but I still think he's very playable, and this Minnesota team on the whole is in a great spot tomorrow. As you mentioned with Buffalo, with Eichel not skating with Evander Kane, and I think I'm going to fade them all together, quite frankly. If anything, I'd play like the O'Reilly line now that Kane and Okposo are with them. But this is too tough of a matchup, and I'm going to pass.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much done with Buffalo for the season. I'm serious. They're just I covered Dauber on Friday nights, and Buffalo usually has Friday night home games. So I've seen a lot of Buffalo games this year, and they're pathetic. They're just pathetic offensively. They have no creativity. They have no flow to their game. It basically, they just dump it in or watch somebody like Evander Kane rip it from the blue line. Like, that's all they do. So Buffalo's just a full fade for me here. I love that second line of Koivu, Granlin, and Niederreiter. You talked about how much Koivu, Granlin, and Zucker would pop in projections. Niederreiter, like, he's one of the most underrated wingers in the NHL, and it's not just his defensive game, it's offensively too. If you look at his shot contributions and shot assists, stuff like that, they're just off the charts. So I really like them as a mid-price stack. I think you can stack the three of them for like 15 or 16K. It's not that expensive at all. Like, they're not, like an 18 or 19K line. And they were also all skating together on the power play today in practice. So not only do you get them together at 5-on-5, but you also get them all together on the power play. So when you get that strong correlation, they're one of my favorite stacks of the night. They'll probably be my second or third highest exposure. I'm guessing. I'm with you. I do like Spurgeon on the blue line, Spurgeon or Suter. I mean, potato, tomato, they're both 5K. I don't think there's a huge difference there. The last name I'll mention is Joel Eriksson Ek. He's skating on the third line and he's only 3K on DraftKings. He won't get power play time, but if you look at Parise and Coyle playing together last year, they did really, really well together. Even without Eric Staal, they did spend quite a bit of time with Staal, but even without him, they did well generating offense. So I don't mind using Eriksson Ek kind of as a one-off. I talked about Daniel Sprong earlier. If you want to use another one-off in the tournament to really, be able to fit in some expensive stacks, I think that's fine. But for me, I think the game's about that Minnesota second line of Koivu, Granlund, and Niederreiter. I'm going to have a whole bunch of them.
All right. Here comes the insanity, guys. The Vegas Golden Knights. That's right. The 27-win Vegas Golden Knights travel to St. Louis to face the Blues. The numbers here are just off the charts. Batty. Vegas overall on the road scores a lot, gives up a lot. But funny thing is, over about the last, I would say, 7 or 8 games, or since Subban and Fleury fully got back to full playing status, they've been a little bit better. They've actually given up less than 3 goals a game while still scoring at that same pace. Vegas, oddly enough, plays a little bit faster on the road than they do at home. It doesn't look like it from the amount of goals they score, and it seems like they're always jumping on somebody 2-0 like it's no one's business. But overall pace, oddly enough, their pace is higher on the road than at home. The Blues, we saw it last night. The Blues were manhandled every so often at times, and particularly in overtime and 4-on-4 situations last night. They just got hammered. I think we saw it the other day. I can't remember who had it. Tarasenko's Corsi possession numbers being a full 30% lower without Schwartz than with Jaden Schwartz. And look, not saying Vegas is going to win here, but at the same time, they moved the puck up the ice. Like, it's hard to explain. It really is. Unless you've watched a few games, it's something to watch. This is a team that throttled LA while being on the back end of a back-to-back. So The Blues are going to have their work cut out for them again. You know, it's an interesting spot. At some point, yes, Vegas has to lose. Maybe this is it. I don't know. But there's a part of me that just wants to, I can't believe I'm saying this, fade this game pretty much all the way. Like, am I bloody nuts for doing this?
I mean, here's the tough thing for me, is that I think if you can get into the second and third lines from Vegas, is that that's where you're going to have success. The problem is that St. Louis, ever since Schwartz got hurt, especially in the last few games, they haven't really been hard matching at home. So you don't really know who's going to play against Carlson and Marchessault and Smith. So as far as line matching goes, I wouldn't be concerned about it too much. I don't think I'll have any of Vegas in this game. It's not really a great matchup. I mean, it's a good contrarian play, I think, to go with Vegas. Just because I don't think many people will have them, but at the same time, they've been on fire so much. Maybe one of those nights where it surprises me and, you know, the ownership's like 13% or something like that, even though it should be a lot lower than that. I'll probably just fade Vegas. One thing I don't mind is that Stastny Tage Thompson line. They've looked good from what I've seen from them. I mean, obviously, it's just a small sample, but they, you know, at least Thompson looks like he's meshing well with Stastny. They're playing together on the power play, even though Vegas doesn't take a lot of penalties. You do have that correlation there. Parayko's still on the top PP unit, so if you want to use him, he's way, way, way cheaper than Pietrangelo, like almost 2K on DraftKings. So I don't mind using Parayko either. But it seems to me, like, I'm not going to fade this game like you, but it seems to me I'm probably going to go one of two directions. I'm either going to have a mini stack of Thompson and Stastny, and, you know, you can fit those two in there and throw in Parayko for like 12 or 13,000, something super, super cheap that can help fit in the rest of your stacks. Or I'll just have Parayko by himself, but I'm not going to have either of the goalies, and I'm almost certainly going to say Vegas in this one.
Chris, to answer your question there, I don't think you'd be crazy to fade this game. When you start looking at just the underlying numbers for both of these teams, I mean, Vegas, the Vegas Golden Knights, the expansion team, they have not been a great matchup for DFS. I mean, when Marc-Andre Fleury was out of there, maybe you could catch them with below average goaltending, and that way we'd pick on them. But with Flower back in there, like, man, their underlying stats look good. The advanced stats look good on them. Obviously, they play at a really fast pace, which has just been a treat to watch. I don't really love the St. Louis side here. Like Pietrangelo or Parayko would probably be where I'd go. Maybe a Tarasenko one-off. Or potentially pairing Tarasenko with Shen. But as I mentioned, not a great matchup. So I don't think I'm going to end up having St. Louis exposure. And there's usually at least one guy that kind of ruins a stack for me on those depth lines. So, and even on that Shen line, like Scotty Upshaw is skating with them. And I just don't really have much interest there. So I think Parayko and Pietrangelo might be it for me. And on the Vegas side, they're going into St. Louis, and, you know, that's a really tough context. And I know the Carlson line has been just incredible this year, but Carlson himself has a shooting percentage that's like three times his shooting percentage over the last 3 years, which is just completely unsustainable. So I don't think I'm going to play any Vegas here. This might be a game that I fade altogether, though it might be fun to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, my rationale for fading completely is I don't know where the scoring's going to completely come from. I mean, for all we know, frickin' St. Louis 3 drives everybody crazy and donks this. Only because it just sets up. Vegas is on too much of a high. It's like trying to figure out, all right, when is it going to crash for one night? And it could be potentially Thursday night. We'll see. All right, invoking the executive devil's privilege. We're fast-forwarding through the New Jersey-Dallas game to simply say, you know what? I'm not expecting much. I don't like either matchup on either team, frankly, other than maybe a couple players here and there as one-offs. Add in the fact that basically the Devils have a second line that can't generate anything other than one player, or if he goes offside, God forbid. It's the old adage of how is New Jersey going to get screwed tomorrow night? Because it seems like they've been finding new and more creative ways. That part doesn't matter now. The part that matters is basically you're going to want to just basically not try to stack this game. And arguably, depending on the news of the next game, guys, with Colorado and Columbus, I don't know the status of Semyon Varlamov yet. I know he pulled his groin last night, and they're basically waiting to see if he's going to go or not. Columbus played one of the most boringest 40 minutes of hockey on Tuesday night against Dallas that I can remember in a long time. I mean, there was just nothing going on. It was dead. But that being said, Colorado's been great. Nathan MacKinnon is an MVP candidate. What year is I can't say what year is this, but look, Colorado has been extremely respectable all year. They're 4 games over .500. They're 6 over at home. They're entertaining at home. They score almost 3.6 a game at home. They've won 4 of their last 5. They've won 3 straight. You know, like we said, Columbus is banged up. 3 of their top 6 players are out. Their 2 top centers are out. It's been dicey. It's now to the point where Tortorella has to go this way. Basically play safe as safe, if you will. Now this sets up kind of well for Colorado. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean it does. I will say the first thing that popped me in this game, another road stack, that Aaron Dubois, Anderson stack. I mean, Tortorella's been an absolute disaster with lines this year. He changes them up all the time, but the one thing that he has kept together for the most part is that Dubois and Aaron Anderson line. Colorado doesn't have any matchup that really concerns me. I mean, I was looking at it today with the MacKinnon line on the ice. They're giving up 60 shot attempts against the 60 minutes, lift them off the ice at 63. So whether it doesn't really matter what the matchup is, Colorado's not great defensively. So that stuck out to me. Obviously, MacKinnon and them, I don't mind using them. Colorado, and this is kind of the weird thing for me, is that Colorado is the league leader in power play opportunities per game. And like, it's not really close either. They're well over 4 per game. The problem is Columbus doesn't take many penalties. They're well under 3 per game. So Colorado does draw a lot of its offense through their power play, particularly those top 3 guys. So can they get back going in this game? I don't know. I think this is a game where I'll probably fade the Colorado side. If I have anything, it'll be Anderson, Dubois, and Aaron. I don't know how much of it I'll have just because they are starting to get a little bit expensive. I mean, it's nothing extreme. You can still stack that top line for about 16.5, which isn't that bad. It's just that it's come up a little bit over the last few weeks. So it's that top line for me are probably busting this game.
I mean, Mike, I would say I do like your call there, especially from a GBP angle, because I really just don't expect much ownership on the Columbus side to begin with. But as you mentioned, Tortorella has just been so maddening with his line configurations and changing them before the game and whatnot. This is not a team that you can kind of set it and forget it. So if you're playing the Anderson line, please make sure that that's the one you're actually playing and they stick together and follow those news on Twitter or what have you. Just have a news outlet ready because you just never know what Tortorella. Personally, because I'm probably not going to mass multi-enter. I usually don't, and I'm more of a three max player. This, you know, the Columbus side just isn't as great in that sort of a format. Like, I don't think of them as a primary GPP play. I don't even think Mike alluded to that anyways. But I do find them interesting in mass multi-entry. On the Colorado side, I also think the McKinnon line is going to be in play here. No doubt about it. The challenge with them is the price tags are starting to get up. Even on Rantanen, who's been awesome with them essentially all season long, he's up to $5,700. And obviously he's been great of late here as well, but you know, from a price perspective, it's going to start to cost you a little bit more now. So that's really the only challenge I see with them, but I do believe they're in play here. Probably more so in GBP than cash games because of the prices. But I do think they're in play.
Yeah. Now, of course, guys, the next matchup has its own sort of, this could be absolutely nuts. One of the more bizarre things this season that I noticed, at least, is Nashville's disconnect between home and the road. Nashville gives up just beaucoup goals. I mean, almost they give up almost 3 goals a game at home. But they only give up 2.33 goals on the road. And over the last 12 road games, that's less than 2.2. I mean, put that in perspective, that's on the level basically of Tampa Bay all season. It's crazy. But that hasn't come without a price. Nashville actually on the road has faced top 10 level shots pretty much the whole season. So it's been goaltending. Their goaltending has been demonstrably better on the road because they've been giving up so many shots and scoring chances. However, they go on the road to face Arizona, which, well, it's been painful to say the least. Again, another year, Arizona is one of the worst teams in home goal differential at minus 1.34 already. They've allowed 21 goals in their last 5 games. It's been without a doubt a struggle defensively. When your coaching staff is Rick Tocchet and John McClain, you almost should have expected this from the beginning, but it's a lot more than that, unfortunately. Things just have not gone right. Anthony Duclair is a daily subject of trade rumors now. Several teams actually inquiring about his services just this week alone. But the one thing I will get at real quick, guys, there's no Philip Forsberg. Yeah, I'm sad. I'm not going to lie. No Forsberg for the next 4 to 6 weeks, guys. He has a broken, what's believed to be hand/wrist. I guess the good news, if there is any, is there's no torn ligaments, which is something that can really linger in players of his caliber. So Calle Järnkrok has taken his spot on the top line, at least for now. And I can't say I lie here. I don't like it. I'm guessing the question would be for Chris, what Nashville plays should I consider for tomorrow night?
Well, and Chris, on Järnkrok specifically here, I understand that you might not love the talent there and the fact that he's joined the top line, but he has played 20 minutes here in both of the last 2 games, and he is $4,300 in a pretty good matchup. So while the talent might not be great, I think the opportunity is, and so it looks like he's also skating with Johansson and Arvidsson in all situations, including the power play. So it's a pretty darn good opportunity for him. The play I probably like the most here, and it's because the floor-ceiling combination is always tantalizing, is Victor Arvidsson for $6,300. It's a guy that shoots the puck at will. And so in this sort of matchup, it's the type of matchup I love to target him in. And so I'm probably going to be having him in cash games if I play that format tomorrow. Subban, PK Subban kind of jumped up in price. He's now up nearly 6K. I still think he's certainly in the mix here. And then Roman Josi, who's $6,700, that is an appropriate price tag. And with Ryan Ellis back, you know, they are basically now at full health on that blue line. So perhaps a little bit less minutes upside on guys like Josi and Subban. But I think from a macro level, you got to love the spot here for Nashville. I just think I'd be hard pressed to get away from that top line going into tomorrow night, because the tourist line, who I also like, challenge with them is they're priced appropriately now.
Yeah, I'll agree with Chris there that line has started to get more expensive. I mean, Kevin Fiala and Craig Smith are both over 5,500. Kyle Turris is as well. So if you're looking to stack that line, you know, at once upon a time is, you know, between 13 and 14K. Now you're looking over 17K. So it is getting expensive. One thing I will say is I do like their matchup a lot better than Nashville's, you know, quote-unquote top line to Hanson Arvidsson and Yarncroft. I presume that Ekman Larson and Jason Demers are going to see a whole bunch of that Johansson line. And if you look at the numbers on and off the ice with that defense pair for Arizona this year, it's just insane. Like on the ice, I think they're like 51% possession. And when they're off the ice, it's just abysmal. It's like 44, 43%. So I think that Turris line, you know, if you can get into the second and third pair for Arizona, if you can get into the second and third line for Arizona, absolutely shred. So if I'm going to stack anything out of the Nashville game, it's probably going to be that second line with Turris, Fiala, and Smith. One price that does stick out to me big time is Jacob Chychrun, defenseman for Arizona. I was tweeting about it earlier today. He's played 12 games since he returned from injury. In those 12 games, he leads Arizona defensemen in 5-on-5 ice time. And recently, he just joined the top power play unit as well. And Nashville's the most penalized team in the league. So if you look at his price on DK, it's like 3,400 or something like that. He's to play, you know, 22, 23 minutes. He's a guy that leads their defense corps shots per minute when he's on the ice. And he's also going to be playing top power play, you know, on a power play that should get 3 or 4 opportunities. So I like Chychrun here a lot in all formats, especially considering his price. If I'm going to stack anything from the Nashville side, it's probably going to be that for this one.
All right. Now it gets fun. Oh, God, I don't want to even think about this game, but I have to. Anaheim travels to Edmonton to face the Oilers, who, well, let's face it, Edmonton stunk in their last game. It's about the kindest way I could put it. They were bad. They were really disastrously bad. And obviously, Edmonton has been a disaster at home all season. This is an Edmonton team that gives up 3.7 goals a game at home and only 2.75 on the road. Yeah, it really is that bad. They've lost 4 of their last 5. It's not pretty. And yes, they still have the league's worst penalty kill at just above 70%. Anaheim's been pretty good. Ryan Getzlaf is back. Ryan Getzlaf looks like the Getzlaf of old. They've won 4 of their last 5. They're starting to turn things around. They look better. They haven't been great on the road, but they've been better of late. The only problem they've really had is the power play has been hit or miss. They generate shots. They generate pretty good chances on the power play at times. But, it's been a lot of hit or miss. It's tough because there's another team that's almost as good, semi as good of an option below for a potential. You know, obviously Nashville has decently hammer potential. But so does another team just below. Mike, is there something to say maybe, you know, we just roll Getzlaf's line or parts of Getzlaf's line until they fall off?
So here's the thing, is that Patrick Maroon got suspended today for 2 games for his hit on Drew Doughty. If you look at the game log, he had taken the place of Milan Lucic on the top line with McDavid and Puljujärvi. And then when he got kicked out, it was actually Ryan Nugent-Hopkins that got moved up. So I'm going to wait to see what the Edmonton lines are in morning skate Thursday, because if Nugent-Hopkins is on that top line, that probably frees up, you know, Leon Draisaitl probably moves to the second line. But, you know, with Maroon out and then Nugent-Hopkins up on that top line, that's a pretty big hit to an already what's apparently a weak offensive, you know, forward depth for the Oilers. So I might look to use Kessler and Silverberg. They're both playing the top power play unit together. I'm assuming they'll get the second and third line matchups from Edmonton. And they'll have almost no ownership. I think anybody that goes to Anaheim in this game will probably go to Getzlaf and Raquel. The Oilers have an abysmal penalty kill. And I think it was Micah McCurdy was tweeting about this earlier, is that all the chances that the Oilers give up come from down low. Yeah. Who plays down low is Ryan Kessler. So I think I would probably use Kessler and Getzlaf in this game. But again, I'm going to wait to see what the lines are for Edmonton, because if they do have, you know, Nugent-Hopkins on the top line against the second line, it'll probably change the way that I look at them.
Yeah, I think the most interesting stack for me in this game is the Cogliano Kessler Silverberg stack. Cogliano is just $3,300 on DraftKings. Obviously, he doesn't skate with Kessler and Silverberg on the power play, which is a miss, but he is $3,300 again, so he's really darn cheap. I think that would be the one stack that I'd play in this game. I really do quite them a lot, like them a lot, and as they continue to be underpriced, I'm just going to continue to hammer, even if they're just in decent matchups, because I just think the price tags right now aren't correct on that line. They were one of the better lines last year in hockey, and so I really like them in this context, despite being on the road. On the Edmonton side, for me, yes, it's wait and see mode until we know what the lines are going to be. Perhaps on a 12-game slate, you don't get a very chalky Connor McDavid. With Anaheim coming essentially back to full strength, sans Corey Perry, it's not a great matchup. They're not going to be a great matchup to target in DFS now. So it's not a great spot for Edmonton, but they are at home, and Connor McDavid is just Connor McDavid. So on a 12-game slate, I think he's attractive in tournaments because I don't think we see much ownership there. But from a cash game perspective here, I'm probably going to pass altogether.
Yeah, couple things. For people that were a little bit scared of Andrew Cogliano, took a pretty significant hit last game. He's fine. I know he has that Iron Man streak of Iron Man streaks for Anaheim. Another thing I noticed, Mike, you were alluding to the heat map on Edmonton's penalty kill. There is a level of red that I haven't seen on a Micah McCurdy heat map in three plus seasons since I've seen them. All on that right side, right about 5 to 10 feet from the net and in. It's scary. I mean, it's like there's a fire engine red that I haven't seen. So, yeah, it does definitely put Kessler more in play. And look, folks, you have to wait for these morning lines. And I will say this only because, the interlude to the last game, really fast. If you're on the East Coast, God forbid, say from, I don't know, Philadelphia on north, try to get your information however which way you can, in case, God forbid, the power goes out and you still want to play DFS. Look, it's stupid sometimes. But, again, things to keep in mind as you're going to try and play tomorrow. All right, last game on the slate, guys. It is the LA Kings traveling to Calgary to face the Calgary Flames. Tough building for Calgary. Sort of like we used to joke about with now we can joke about with Edmonton, and besides Arizona, Buffalo, and other teams. Calgary is basically just about a .500 team at home. Quirkiest thing with Calgary is they have not lost in overtime or in a shootout at home. Strange, but true. But here's the problem with this game. Calgary hasn't been scoring a lot lately. They haven't been giving up a lot lately. LA in the last five games has given up just 9 goals. LA also has the number one penalty kill. They also don't give up a ton of goals anywhere. As much as it pains me to say this, I just want Jeff Carter to come back. I'm not going to lie. I missed the 70s line. I wanted to come back. But all kidding aside, LA does have a slightly better matchup here. My only question, Mike, is where do I go, though?
Yeah, I mean, I think on a 12-game slate, I'm probably just going to fade the Kings here. I don't think there's a necessity to take one of those lines on the road. I mean, obviously, both of them are loaded with talent. You look at Toffoli, you look at Kopitar and Pearson, and even Gabbert kind of looks a little rejuvenated. There's a lot of talent there, but they just don't score. I mean, I guess the top line, if you want, because, you know, that backline matchup isn't nearly as scary with Michael Frolik injured. But the thing that jumped out to me at this game is probably the Calgary top line. You know, Los Angeles just isn't as good defensively this year as they have been in prior seasons. I mean, you did talk about the penalty kill, and that's obviously very fair, but they do take a fair amount of penalties. They're about 3.75 per game. The league average is about 2.3. So, you know, maybe Calgary can sneak one by, go 1-4 or something like that. But I think that, you know, that top line's come down in price quite a bit. I think you can stack them for about 16.5, which is a lot cheaper than they were, just a couple weeks ago when they were about 19,000. And I think they get really overlooked here because you're right. It's not a great matchup with the way Jonathan Quick is kind of playing, but I think that Gaudreau line is going to get into the second and third lines of the Kings, and I think that's where they can be exploited. And with the price coming down and with them probably getting overlooked, in a home matchup, they're well rested, they haven't played since New Year's Eve, I think I kind of like the Calgary top line in this game.
Mike just came in and stole my thunder. I was just going to say that I completely agree with that point. I was just hoping I had it by myself. But to your point there, Mike, no. Los Angeles has not been the same, like, defensive group here over the last couple seasons this year. They've kind of, if you look at the advanced analytics, they've kind of just been middle of the pack defensively, which is a step down for them because they have been just so incredible defensively, really over a span of time, like 3-4 years here. But this year they're like league average, and Jonathan Quick is really he's just been incredible for them.
Yeah.
So I think with people still thinking that they're just too tough of a matchup, and because of the way Quick is playing, I guess they are. I think this top line just gets completely overlooked in a slate like this. And given how they performed offensively this year, I'm in there for GPPs. I think you get them easily sub 10% ownership in this slate. And the price tags have come down, which is another positive for that line. So, Mike, make it 3-for-3, if anything. I'm there with you on this line. I'm not going to say anything on the Kings side because I just don't have interest there. Maybe long term, if Tanner Pearson has joined that top line, I'm definitely more interested in stacking them than when Eofalo was on that top line. But I just wanted to add on the Anaheim side of things, on that last game we mentioned, John Gibson, if he does start tomorrow, I really like him with the Kessler stack that we talked about. Edmonton is has been like Carolina. Like, they put some rubber in that, but they just don't score. And so this is a good spot on the road for Gibson. It's a sneaky spot. And in GPPs, I like it because he's just $7,500. And I do see the upside here for him to get, you know, 30-plus save opportunities.
Okay, here's the one fun thing that we put into the old database real quick. Guys, I don't believe this number only because I haven't seen this practically since that one magical Colorado run with Semyon Varlamov. Jonathan Quick's penalty kill save percentage is 922. Let that sink in for a second. He's faced 166 shots on the penalty kill. He's actually on pace right now to face a career high, which he did basically three times where he's faced more than 330 shots. But there's only been one year where he was above a 900 save percentage on a penalty kill, and that was that 2011-2012 season where, yeah, he won some hardware and then won some more hardware and more hardware. Over the last 10 road games, the Kings penalty kill guys has given up the seventh most shots and scoring chances in the league. And that number gets worse if you take a little bit longer of a snapshot. By the way, Quick's penalty kill save percentage over the last 10 road games is 929, which is also his season save percentage. Every time we say it can't continue, somehow this year he's found a way. He's literally on pace to match all his career highs this year at the age of 30, just about 32, which is just filthy. All right, guys, that does it for this episode of Fantasy Hockey X. We managed to get through this in 70 minutes, which is not bad for a huge 12-game slate. You'll be able to download this on iTunes hopefully by the morning. And as always, a special thanks to Michael Clifford and Christopher Pacheco for joining me. And as always, we will see you next week. Or if you have questions on Twitter, just contact us at ChrisWasselDFS, LimCliffy, or _ the numbers guy. For all of us here at Fantasy Hockey X, goes as simple as saying, have a great night and good luck with DFS tomorrow night.